after the Jacksonville Landing is demolished, then what? A picture is emerging of the city's plans. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, new details on what's planned for the former landing site. Join the conversation. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, today's book club. All of that and more just ahead. But first this hour, what is planned for the former site of the Jacksonville Landing? New renderings have emerged showing what the city wants to do, and it involves a lot of green space. Here with more, Mike Field of our digital partner, The Jackson. The Jackson is a multi-platform partnership between Modern Cities and WJCT. Opinions expressed there don't necessarily reflect our views. Mike Field, good morning.
Good morning.
And what are your questions about the fate of the Jacksonville Landing site? Give us a call at 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. All right. So what have we learned? WOKV first reported the city's vision for the landing. You've picked up on it. What are the future plans for the site?
Mostly nothing.
Nothing.
So as we predicted about a year ago, we thought that the site would be just a grass field for the foreseeable future. And as WOKV reported last week, the city confirmed that. Essentially, the city has appropriated $2.25 million for what they're calling a riverfront plaza. And that's spread over 3 years. Next year, we'll have $225,000 to do what we do best, do a study of what will happen there in the future. And then over the next 2 years, in 2021 and 2022, there are another $2 million associated with bringing landscaping up to codes. And that doesn't include any construction of what will eventually happen there. So essentially, for the foreseeable future, we'll have yet another grass field.
Another grass field. And what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's probably one of the worst decisions that have happened downtown in my lifetime. And that includes some boondoggles like the courthouse and the Skyway and things of that nature. Essentially, what we've done is spend now essentially $25 million to rip out 30 businesses that are existing downtown and then replace them with a lawn.
In fact, your website, The Jackson, is dubbing this new plan Lenny's Lawn.
Yeah.
Have you had a reaction from the mayor's office to that?
No, not really. And it's really not meant to offend the mayor's office, but the mayor's office really has taken ownership of this site. So I think the moniker Lenny's Lawn is pretty apt.
Okay, so you're saying, let's talk about the cost of this. And by the way, it's 549-2937 to join the show. We're talking about more than $20 million to demolish the landing. And theoretically, the idea is to move all of the excitement and focus over to Lot J, where Shad Khan's development company and the city have struck a deal for hundreds of millions of dollars in incentives to create a new live venue there, along with some other development. That's what's driving this. And what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think there should be two separate issues that have been molded into one. Incentivizing development at Lot J is good for the Jaguars. It definitely improves the game day experience. It makes them a viable entity going forward. But it's not the catalyst for any kind of downtown development fiasco. It's really just a mile away from the walkable core of Jacksonville, the downtown Jacksonville, and it won't spark any development at all in the walkable core. Should we be incentivizing the Jaguars? Probably, yeah. We're in the business of being an NFL city here. Should we be walking and chewing gum at the same time by, focusing efforts into the walkable core of downtown while also, spending money at the Jaguars? Probably so. And that's kind of what our focus has always been. I think we do a lot of, selling that we're an innovative place and we have these really, one trick pony, projects like the Skyway or now Lot J, and we have this barbell theory. But really, instead of telling us that we're innovative and selling that to people, we should really be kind of C students. And what we mean by C students is we shouldn't be dumb, but we should be focusing on what makes walkable environments, work. And that's, compact development within a, complementary use is within a compact environment that's contextually sensitive to the environment. And we speak a lot about, you know, clustering things together in a walkable area.
So then if you don't like the idea of demolishing the landing and turning it into green space, what would you have preferred the city do?
Well, it's interesting. If you look what's going on right now along Laura Street, you have as much investment on Laura Street right now as you do that would incur at Lot J. You have Vistar moving about 1,000 employees in. You have a hotel being built next to the Vistar campus. You have the Laura Trio going in. That's essentially what is going on at Lot J, or, you know, maybe 5 to 7 years down the road. That's happening now. What can the city do to kind of, further encourage adaptive reuse along the Laura Street corridor? That's what we're really focused on.
You would have preferred them to keep the landing intact and redevelop it into some new use?
Absolutely. You know, 5 years ago, the mayor's office said, you know, Alvin Brown had a $12 million incentive package to redevelop the landing. At the time, the mayor's office, or the now mayor's office, said that's an absurd amount of money to spend while people are dying in the streets. Well, yesterday we just had our 100th homicide this year. People are still dying in the streets, but yet now we're spending $25 million to take over what was working somewhat, but not working well, and just moving it over a mile away. That's kind of like a Simpsons episode where they took the entire Springfield and moved it over a few miles.
For those that have watched that show for a long time, they'll get that reference. Well, let me ask you, though, just to push back on the idea that the landing could be adaptively reused. What about the argument that it just wasn't working and that any adaptive reuse plan probably wouldn't have been successful? What do you say to those folks?
Well, in a few months when the landing is torn down, we'll be the only city in the United States that has torn down their festival marketplace without reusing it. Every city that has had a festival marketplace has reused it in some manner. And we have multiple examples on our website about that. Anywhere from, reusing it into a college, like they did in Flint, Michigan, to what they did in Richmond, Virginia, which is Harborside, which is exactly what they're doing at Lot J. They reused the festival marketplace there and made a food hall, made, you know, great amenities about it. The structure of the landing is just fine. I mean, let alone the air chillers on top of the roof are $2.5 million by themselves. You have basically turnkey spaces in the landing. Why not use what's already there? It's kind of maddening.
You're maddened by it, as is everyone with your organization that advocates for keeping an existing building intact if you can. This has gone in line with frustration over the demolition of some other downtown sites, although not all of them, one might argue, were worth saving. But when it comes to the landing, there's been a groundswell of opposition to the plan to demolish it. However, the majority of the Jacksonville City Council is on board with it. So it does not seem to me anyway that there's any way to stop it. Do you still plan to advocate against demolishing the landing?
Well, until it's brought down, there's always hope. That hope is probably lost at this point. But, you know, I'm a diehard Jacksonville resident. I've lived here all my life. I love it here. And I'm just tired of the potential not waiting to happen. And so if there's $25 million being spent to turn a functioning building into a grass field and a place where I own a business and I live downtown, I'm going to be, advocating for not doing something like that.
All right. And let's go to lots of calls about this as we're learning the city's plans for the former landing site. It's still standing, but it is on pace to be demolished. What do you think of plans to turn the spot into a green space? It's 549-2937. Michael is in Jacksonville Beach. Hey, Michael. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling.
No problem. Hey, I just wanted to share my opinion hearing about the new plans for what was the landing. I guess I find myself a little bit frustrated that there's not a very clear plan. And I say that just because I feel like, there's so many even small cities now that have done a lot to regenerate their downtown areas. I was just in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, and I was very impressed in just 10 years when I went to school there how much it's evolved. D.C., the Navy Yard, San Diego, Indianapolis, and I just feel like there's tons of case studies of cities using these spaces for very good purposes. And I wish we could, and open space can be a great option. I just wish we could, you know, tap into these examples and learn from them, and just kind of, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just look what has worked and what hasn't, and start doing that here. I feel like there's just a delay in that progress here in Jacksonville.
Michael, thanks for your thoughts.
First of all, he's got a great first name. I love Michael. secondly, you know, you asked earlier, is the landing, you know, viable for reuse? Essentially, we're putting a new landing at the stadium right now. And what the live entertainment complexes are essentially the landing, but instead of an outdoor courtyard, it's a covered pavilion. So it's the same thing. You have restaurants around a centralized covered area. And, you know, it's $50 million for that.
And these types of developments have been successful in other cities. So what's your response to those who are bullish about this idea of Lot J and think it will be really exciting for the downtown footprint, even though it's on the eastern edge of the urban core, so to speak?
See, Melissa, that's a great point. I'm a Jaguars season ticket holder since day one. I love the Jags here. We're an NFL city. I'm proud of that fact. I don't mind necessarily that we're incentivizing, you know, the Jaguars. I don't at all. But we should be able to, like I said, walk and chew gum at the same time. Doing development a mile away should not be at the expense of development in the walkable core of downtown.
In other words, this is a big enough city now that we could do both.
We could absolutely do both.
Is that your point?
Absolutely do both. And just from a numbers perspective, just back of the napkin numbers, since the Jaguars have come here, you know, now 25 years ago, including this new Lot J incentive package for about $220 million, we'll have basically spent about $440 million on the stadium and surrounding, you know, areas along the stadium. If you look at that, that's a pretty good deal. If Lot J kind of pushes out the talk of a new stadium here in Jacksonville for another 10 years, then $440 million over a 25-year period is a pretty good value. You look at what's happened in Atlanta and Dallas and Minneapolis. These are all $1.5 billion stadiums that they built in the last 2 years that the public has put north of $700 million in incentive programs for. So the $400 million we're spending, you know, with the Jags, that's a pretty good deal in the abstract. Mm.
John is in Mandarin. Hi, John. What are your thoughts?
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, it's beyond me why they want to get rid of the Jacksonville Landing. I mean, this is probably the most beautiful spot in Northeast Florida, and I've been around St. Augustine and Jacksonville beaches and all around. It's beyond me how they made that financial decision and logical decision to get rid of a place that holds so many beautiful memories with a lot of families, a lot of kids, businesses, and so forth. I don't know where the process was to listen to the public and get their input. And that's my question.
Okay, John, thanks for that. The public, do you feel the public's being cut out of this decision, along with some other ones that have been happening lately?
Yeah, I mean, there's been no public input. In April, the mayor's office came out and said, well, we're going to have public input available. Here we are in August, and fences are up around the landing ready for it to be demoed. When has the public had a voice, you know, in this decision? Presumably, this $225,000 study that will be funded next year will be an opportunity for a public discussion. But why didn't the public have a voice before the thing got demoed to see what we can do?
What would you say to the City Hall's response to that, and also Councilman Matt Carlucci calling for a charrette or a series of public workshops? They said, well, that was done 5 years ago. There were charrettes on the landing.
Yeah, and 5 years ago, they didn't say turn it into a grass lawn.
And let me ask you this, too. The argument that let's say that this green space becomes a focal point is a beautiful riverfront site. Would you, and people end up liking it, would you eat your words? Or do you just see this as bad planning?
No, it'd be great if it became a beautiful riverfront plaza. You know, an open grass field for the next 3 to 4 years is not going to attract visitors whatsoever. Unfortunately, the landing looks like it's coming down. So we do have, you know, as a city, we have to kind of come together and put our best foot forward to do something good with the site. it's just a horrible idea to begin with.
Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. What are your thoughts? Good morning.
Ah, yes. Good morning to y'all. Well, my concern is that this Lot J development will just inevitably wind up competing with the businesses we've been fostering downtown, the ones we've been encouraging for so long, that inevitably, I'm afraid some of them will probably wind up going out of business, and that would be a horrible way to reward them for doing what we ask them to do, come into downtown, invest their time, effort, and money, and then force them out of business because our plans have changed. Not a good way to inspire people to have faith in our leadership.
Thank you for that, Tom. William is also downtown. Hi, William. How are you this morning? What are your thoughts?
I'm doing okay, thank you. The last caller took my question, so I have one other thing. How do the neighborhoods that surround downtown, like the Riverside and the San Marco and the Springfield and those types of places, how do they play a role in keeping downtown healthy, and how would they be impacted if Lot J is built up like they say?
Okay, thanks for that. And let's talk a little bit about the plans for Lot J. And by the way, an opportunity zone was granted to this site for development around some areas that really do have needs and are underserved. That's something else we can get into. But what about his comment regarding the neighborhoods all around the urban core and how they'll be impacted by Lot J taking off and developed?
It's another, you know, walk and chew gum scenario. I think we can, you know, do downtown development, but we can also make our, you know, urban core neighborhoods stronger. Since 1960, the urban core, what we consider the pre-consolidated limits of Jacksonville, has lost 60% of its population. So not only has downtown kind of, you know, suffered over the last four decades, but the surrounding density around downtown has also suffered. And, you know, we need to do more to reinvest in our neighborhoods like the Springfield and the East Side and La Villa, Durkeyville, those neighborhoods like that have lost that density.
Let's talk about the man at the center of all this, Shad Khan. He has received a very generous incentives package from Jacksonville, the most generous in the history of the city for this kind of project. And certainly he has a lot of leverage to enact his vision. And it seems as though that vision includes eliminating another node to the west as a potential draw away from what he would like to do. What about that?
Well, again, we'd have no animosity towards Shad Khan. I mean, again, we're Jaguar fans. Should we be in the business of having an NFL team? Yes. If that's the case, we should be incentivizing, you know, improvements to the stadium. However, what we have a problem with is spending $25 million to turn, a functioning part of our city core into a grass field and simply moving it, you know, a mile away.
Sierra tweets the show, 12 blocks of grass field on the waterfront is an outstanding disappointment for basically anybody visiting our city. Recently, someone from out of town asked me, where's the best place to eat on the river? And I had no answer for her. Here is a tweet from Steven. We all know what's really going to happen with the green space swap for Metropolitan Park. Please discuss the details of the federal rules and its emphasis on the city and the space. Okay, let's talk about that for a moment. This notion that perhaps the reason the city wants green space at the former landing site is so that they can do a federal land swap and develop the Metropolitan Park site, which is across the street from Lot J. Do you give any credence to that idea?
Well, no, and the mayor's office came out last week and said no to that as well. I'm not privy to the exact details, but from my understanding is that if Met Park closes, which it probably will be, there has to be a comparable land swap as far as acreage is concerned, and I don't think the landing site meets that criteria. So I would assume, we're just going off of what we've been told, that, you know, part of the shipyard's property will eventually be part of that that green space swap. And really, if you look at it, the most contaminated...
So there is still a swap intended, but just not Metropolitan Park, you think?
That's what we surmise, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the reason then for creating the green space at the landing site, you think?
I don't think that the landing space, green space, will be that swap. I think that the swap will be on part of the shipyard's property that is the most contaminated portion, which is kind of the eastern portion of the shipyard's property. That's the most contaminated piece of land there. That's what costs the most to do remediation. If you do a park, that's certainly more cost effective to do a park there than it would be to put development there.
Melissa is in Orange Park. I love that name, just like you like Michael. Hey, Melissa, good morning. How are you? Go ahead.
Good morning. I was wondering about the green space that's set to take over the landing area. Will people be able to picnic on it? Will people be able to walk on the grass? And if so, are they just not moving the homeless population from the park right outside of City Hall down to the landing on the river?
Thanks for all your questions. All questions that we have. Mike Field.
Absolutely. You know, there is a need for more, you know, park space, you know, good, high quality park space in the urban core. I think what we advocate for time and time again is if you're going to have green space, it has to have, you know, certain, it has to be programmed, you know, constantly. Just a passive lawn is not going to attract anybody, but just, you know, transient users. You have to have spaces around it, like restaurants and retail, that draw people in. And so just having a grass lawn is not going to do that, but having a well thought out and well programmed public space would.
Cindy emails the show, living downtown for 16 years, I noticed that whenever we have a new grassy space, it becomes a place for homeless to congregate. How will we keep that from happening? Will there be a place for food trucks, bathrooms, tables, picnic areas? That's been a criticism of this plan, Mike, that it could become just a new congregation site for homeless people. And of course, we're not criticizing the fact that homeless people do need somewhere to go. But what are your thoughts about that aspect of the narrative or the criticism of this whole plan?
Well, you know, if I can understand the frustration, because you look at spaces, I'm a downtown resident as well. And you look at the spaces that have been torn down for quote unquote future development, and they become, you know, unmaintained grassy fields. We don't want that to happen here at the landing space. So we'll advocate for good, high quality, mixed use public space in the future.
Bob on the west side. Hey, Bob, thanks for holding. So I guess you used to work at the landing, is that right?
Well, when the landing opened, my wife and I had one of the push carts there. And that seemed to be such a vibrant space. And we recently went to Little Rock, and the downtown was, I was very surprised. It was very active with restaurants and shops full of people, people walking around and you know, spending time downtown. I'm really opposed to tearing down the landing, in that I think that, you know, there's continued talk about developing downtown. And I think that that would be could be a great draw if it was developed properly. I think the city is wasting money tearing it down and building a park that's not really going to be commercially viable, I don't think.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that. Here's a tweet from John. Why isn't the city opening up the landing for bids? Let's see what developers want to do, or let's hear from the public since they'll be the ones to use it. That goes back to your points, Mike Field.
John is a smart businessman. You know, put it out to market. See what the interest is. The city recently put a bid out, or a piece of property out in La Villa to bid, and they thought that only Vestcor would bid on it, when in fact two other local firms put really strong bids on the properties. There is interest in these properties. Put it out to bid, see what the interest is in adaptive reuse, and go from there. If there's no interest, that's great. If there is, let's do something with it.
The city has basically said, we just don't think there would be any interest since the site struggled for so long. What about that?
Again, we'd be the only city in the entire country, over 40 examples of tearing down our festival marketplace without reusing it in some form or fashion.
40 examples.
Yeah, I mean, we have countless examples on the JacksonMac.com. It's really maddening in that space. And I get the frustration with people. You know, we all want a better downtown. We all want life to be downtown. And it doesn't have, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to pick up and move. All we have to do is be a C student. Again, you know, focus on clustering.
Be average.
Be average, exactly.
Great. Oh, that's a little depressing, but maybe you're saying just be realistic about what we can achieve.
Well, no, it's a little tongue in cheek. I mean, yeah. You know, instead of let's have these fancy ideas, let's focus on the basics of what make walkable urbanism, you know, work. And that is clustering complementary uses in a compact area. And that's it. That's all it is.
The folks that work at the Jackson, where you are a contributor, are well-versed in urban planning. Is it frustrating for all of you to really have deep knowledge about this field, give well thought out ideas using best practices that have worked in other cities, and basically see it fall on deaf ears with the political and business class of Jacksonville?
Well, it doesn't always fall on deaf ears. We have examples of success stories. The Laura Street reconstruction a few years ago was one of the ideas we advanced. The food truck court that I run on Hogan Street was another example of urban design that we came in, had input on. So, you know, we do have examples of things working. We just need, you know, more people to not necessarily have a closed mind and just think of all opportunities. And I think this is, the landing is a perfect example. This is a closed-minded situation where we're just going to, you know, tear the thing down, and that's what it is. Let's have some input. Let's really have a community discussion around this.
Mark in Arlington. Hi, Mark. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
All right. Thanks.
I wanted to give my 2 cents worth. Appreciate you letting me call in. I moved here. I lived here previously, but I moved back in 2013 from St. Pete. They were going through a similar incident down there with the mayor where he, come hell or high water, he was going to destroy the pier that they had. And he subsequently did. And I think it cost them somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million to remove it. And then they put in a multifunction, multi-use grass area with walking paths. And I mean, looking at this example that Curry's thrown out there, it's almost identical to what he proposed. And they did it. Well, now, fast forward to today, they're spending hundreds of millions to build another pier because of lost revenue, lost tourism, you name it. But we've got Lenny Curry here who's in the pockets of Shad Khan, basically, and giving him all these projects. Well, Curry's going to be out of office long before the landing's developed, long before the shipyards are developed, and possibly even before Lot J is developed. Is it possible that Curry has been offered a position in Khan's organization in trade for doing all of this for him? That would be what I would say, and that it's criminal. And it may
Mark,
not be
we don't know that.
Right
I mean,
that's true. We don't know that, but what he's doing to tear down the city should be considered criminal. It does not belong to him. It belongs to the people of Jacksonville, the taxpayers. It doesn't belong to Lenny Curry. And to not let anybody else have any say in what happens to the property should be considered criminal. I think that we should remove Curry, not remove the landing.
Mark, thanks for the call. Certainly among some voters out there, there's a lot of frustration about not just this demolition, this planned demolition, Mike, but other ones too that have been happening downtown without the public feeling they've had the chance to weigh in.
Yeah. And you know, I can feel Mark's frustration as well. You know, we all want the same thing. Again, we all want a vibrant, you know, downtown. You know, I don't necessarily think that, you know, Mayor Curry or Shad Khan have, you know, bad intentions. I think they have good intentions. But, you know, we work better as a democracy when we all work together and, you know, and we don't have this division. And I think there needs to be a community conversation around what do we want? And I don't think that we want more demolitions. I don't think we want, you know, more nothing. We don't want more grass fields. We want something that works for us and works for Jacksonville.
So many folks waiting on hold to get their 2 cents in about the planned demolition of the Jacksonville Landing and new plans that have emerged. It's going to be a green space, the city says. What do you think? Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I'm just your average C student, and I know I'm not an accountant or anything like that. But if we're ended up spending, if the building was in bad shape, I'd say, okay, knock it down. But we're spending $25 million to turn the thing into a park, and ultimately somebody may come along and decide to build something there. I'm just kind of curious what the commercial potential value of the property is as an empty lot. It just seems to me that the city is setting themselves up for a money loser, so to speak, just for the sake of not being happy with the past performance of any of the folks that have managed the landing in the past. So I'm thankful that your guest is trying to get the word out there. Hey, let's put this thing out for bid and take advantage of a good piece of or a good building and good structure that we have, as opposed to turning it into a park that, you know, I agree, I think it's going to end up being a place where homeless people are going to go, and I don't really fault them for that, but it isn't going to be something that's going to make me want to walk downtown.
Okay, Mark, is the city losing money on this deal? Mike?
Oh, absolutely. The city's going to lose money on the deal. I mean, $25 million to turn it into a green space. That doesn't include whatever's going to come there in the future, which will include more construction costs, which aren't, you know, presently budgeted, but we only, you know, we don't know what those will be, but we surmise that there'll be more incentives to be done if and when a developer is selected to redevelop the site.
Okay, you'll continue to write about this at the Jackson Mag, and as you said, until the building is on the ground, you think there's still hope to change minds.
Well, not only change minds on this site, but change mind about the how we view downtown development. Let's stop this barbell theory of incentivizing developments a mile away, and let's really focus on, you know, compact development within a compact space, complementary development of compact space.
Mike Field of the Jackson, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later in the hour, it's a new option for seniors, how to save your digital legacy. And up next, reader's block and how to cure it. That's in our book club. We'll be right back.
Clay Today reaches the heart of Clay County. Clay Today Print and Digital Products promotes businesses while providing local news and current happenings in Clay County. Information at claytodayonline.com. Join WJCT for a private member reception and screening of the new Downton Abbey movie on Thursday, September 19th at the Cinemark Tinseltown. 6 p.m. reception and 7 p.m. screening. $50 donation. Costumes are encouraged. For more information, go to wjct.org/events.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
This book club segment is underwritten by San Marco Books and More.
Welcome back. Well, you've probably heard of writer's block, but what about reader's block? Our book club leader, Stacy Goldring, is here now to explain what it is and how to combat it. I know you don't have reader's block very often. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Melissa?
I'm great. And you brought a bunch of books with you, which is always exciting.
I did.
But first, what is reader's block?
Well, I've got it.
You have reader's
I've had
block.
It all summer. Yeah. And so I thought I'd talk about it. What is reader's block? It's kind of the same thing as writer's block. Nothing is sticking.
It's hard to get into a book.
It's hard to get into a book. I seem to reread the same sentence over and over again, mm-hmm. and I'm not comprehending. Yeah. So the first question, I did a little research, and the first question you have to ask yourself is, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And since I don't have my stable of psychologists here with me today, but if anyone wants some names and numbers, let me know after the show. I have some suggestions to try to get one through that, because I think everyone has experienced it on some level or another. So I'll go through some of them. You might want to first, after you think, why am I not being able to focus, you might want to try poetry.
Read some poetry.
Yeah, because think about it, it's short. And I brought along this beautiful book called Devotions by Mary Oliver. If you don't know of this author, she's absolutely fabulous. She recently passed away, but she's fabulous. A lot of her poems could be maybe three or four sentences, some maybe a page long.
So easy, short reads.
Right. And there's a lot in each sentence. You know, Emily Dickinson, you know, you get a lot of bang for your buck and it slows you down. And I think we all need to slow down.
And there's science behind the act of reading. If you sit and read, you are actually improving your health. Yep. You are lowering your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You are stimulating synapses in the brain. It's good for you.
That's right. And you know, you always learn something. I was talking in the green room with your next fabulous guest, and he said, you know what? No matter what you read, it's a net gain. You're never going to lose.
Yeah.
You're never going to lose. And also there is, I had some statistics, not statistics, because I'm not a numbers person, but a 2000.
You crack me up.
Well, you know, it's true. A 2016 study shows there's no difference in reading comprehension between those who have listened to an audiobook and those who have read a book. So it doesn't matter how you read, go ahead and listen, but at least engage in a story and in learning.
Yeah.
So that should make anyone feel good who thinks, you know, I don't have time to read a book. You can still garden or drive and be listening to a story. Another suggestion I have is disconnect from that digital dopamine addiction. And that's a quote by author Hugh McGuire, digital dopium addiction. Don't sleep with your phone or computer, even near your bedroom. I leave it in the kitchen now. I'm not interested.
Honestly, I think that's so important, because the more addicted we become to our devices, the less likely we are to put them down and take in information the old-fashioned way.
It's true. And think about when everyone woke up this morning, what is the first thing you grabbed?
Your phone.
Right. And if you did that, you have a digital dopium addiction.
Dopium. You mean dopamine?
That too. What did I say? Dopium. What kind of word is that? I haven't had my caffeine.
I honestly think that is driving people away from books, which isn't a good thing. So maybe when you pick up your phone or tablet, at least read a book on it.
Right.
You can read a book online.
Yeah, you can. Or reread an old favorite. I'm rereading, every so often I'll reread the Harry Potter series. I love Flannery O'Connor. Read some short stories. Presently, I'm rereading from her, Everything That Rises Must Converge. It's beautiful. Read a certain number of pages before committing. And you know what? You are excused from not finishing a book. You were probably an A+ student, and if you started something, you need to finish it. I am giving you permission to throw that book out the window with great force.
If you don't like
it. Right. Reading is a sacred act. You're supposed to enjoy it. Do not feel compelled to finish Dreck. Ever.
Right.
Just
move
get
on.
Rid of it. Yeah.
Now, one thing I want to mention as we continue talking about this, a book that everyone should read, A Gentleman in Moscow, is on your list.
Yes.
And we're excited because the internationally renowned author Amor Towles, did I pronounce that right?
Amor Towles,
mm-hmm. is coming to Jacksonville in the fall to mm-hmm. San Marco Books and More, where you lead book groups and they are the sponsor of your segment. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it.
Okay, so this is something that would go under my rereading category. I read this several years ago when it first came out. He first wrote Rules of Civility, which I think Gentleman is a bet. I think he really matured when he got to that book, this particular book, but I recommend both Rules of Civility and A Gentleman in Moscow. But we're going to have a book club in the bookstore on September 10th Doors will open at 6:30. The discussion will begin at 7. And we'll be discussing A Gentleman in Moscow. And what's great about this book club, you never have to read the book to come. But if you have read the book, I would love to hear why it's so special to you. And I know it's the tickets have been selling like hotcakes for the event. But if you would like to participate in the book club, you can go ahead and contact the bookstore or go to my Facebook page and sign up there. Whatever you want to do, but books at WJC, what is it?
Bookclub@WJCT.org.
Any way you want to do that. But this is an excellent book, and each chapter, you know, you just read a chapter at a time. If you're having trouble focusing, read a chapter at a time. You may be trying to read stuff that's just too difficult. So I would say back it up if that's a problem with reader's block. So forget Samuel Beckett and try Carl Hiaasen.
A Florida author.
Which you can't make this stuff up. But so I'm enjoying. Yeah,
he has really good material to work with.
He does. All he has to do is pick up the Herald, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember Olive Kitteridge, the book Olive Kitteridge? It came out a few years ago, and then I think HBO did a series on. Anyway, Elizabeth Stroud has a new collection of short stories out, and Olive is back, and it's called Olive Again. I think it comes out the first week in September, but you can go ahead and, you know, pre-order your copy today. But short stories, you know, the economy of prose is actually a very beautiful way of writing. So you don't have to be, you know, stuck there with War and Peace to feel intellectual, or try a different genre. You know, pick up nonfiction. You could try sci-fi. You could try, you know, just try young adult. Young adult.
Anything.
You know what? Pick up The Hunger Games. It's a great book. It's great. It's a page turner. Mm-hmm. I know someone who's reading it right. He's rereading it now and enjoying it. And that reading is such a sacred act. We, you know, it's the only thing we do. Only it's between you and your brain. I mean, what could be a better combination? You know, right. It's a win-win situation.
And what
situation.
I love about it is every time you read a book, you get to travel.
You're right.
Without ever leaving. If you can't afford to fly somewhere, you can read about a place and a time, and you can travel anywhere into time and space.
Oh, yeah.
That's my favorite thing about it.
That's beautiful. Are you reading anything right
Not
now?
Anything that makes your list.
Look, as long as it's the written
Which I'm
word.
Embarrassed to say. But, you know, look, if you've listened to Stacey regularly, she always wants your feedback. Email her about the books you're reading at bookclub@wjct.org and mark your calendar, as I said, for this big event coming up in September at San Marco Books and More. The renowned author Amor Towles will be appearing with Stacy and the proprietor Deirdre at San Marco Books and More to talk about his amazing book, A Gentleman in Moscow. And he chose San Marco Books and More because of the window display you created.
That's
it won
right.
a contest.
Yes, Desiree Bailey, and not Desiree, the owner of the bookstore.
Desiree, sorry, yes.
Yes, we had a great time coming up with a display that was very meta. If you're familiar with the book, it takes place at the Hotel Metropole in Russia, which if WJCT wants to send us there to do an on-air live, you know.
I just explained why I read books instead of traveling. Because there's no money for me to travel. That's okay.
Okay. But it was a worldwide contest, and she got a phone call a month or so ago, or an email. I don't know what it was Western Union Telegram. And they informed her that the bookstore had won, and we were just over the moon about it. So if you take a look at the window, there are numerous clues
about
the book. So
and
I
that
suggest
date
you do
again
that.
Is
oh, the book club is the 10th and
September 10th.
Right. And he's coming September 18th. I
18th.
Believe. Yeah, but
okay.
You know, I'm not a numbers girl.
All right. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll see you at San Marco Books and More next month. We'll be right back.
A on the next Fresh Air. The secret history of Koch Industries and how the Koch brothers changed corporate and political power in America. We talk with Christopher Leonard, author of Kochland. It describes how Koch Industries acquired huge businesses while limiting Koch's liability and created a political influence network that set out to remake the Republican Party. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
With rising prices and inventory shortages, the housing market is getting stronger in cities you may not expect.
Everywhere from Kansas City to Cleveland to, this isn't the Midwest, but Boise, kind of a lot of these secondary cities are seeing a real boom right now in their housing markets.
I'm Molly Wood. What's driving that boom? Next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact 358-6327 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
What does it mean to love where you're from? Lila Downs might say it means celebrating your home through song. Oaxaca, Mexico shows up in her music, from folk songs about its beauty to lyrics about political resistance. Grammy-winning artist Lila Downs, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a new way to store your most vital documents. This is an inventive idea created by a local retiree. Shep Harmon is the creator of My Legacy Lockbox, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Great to have you. Now, you relocated to St. Augustine from New England after you and your wife retired, and then you had some challenges. There was a hurricane, cancer surgery.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Because it helped spark an idea, isn't
it? Yeah, it really did, actually. After Hurricane Matthew destroyed our home, and 7 days later, I had cancer surgery. They wouldn't let me help my wife do all the cleanup. I was stuck in a rental unit down at World Golf Village, and I was frustrated because so much of our documentation had been destroyed. And being in the rental and not being able to help do the cleanup, I had to do all the paperwork for insurance and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find half the things I had to do. I couldn't find proof of value, and it was hard to locate all these documents. And sure, the insurance company had the policies and they had what they had, but they didn't have our stuff. And so I determined after I got healthy that I was never going to leave my wife in a position like that again. So I built a system for our family to access all vital documents online.
It's a safety deposit box for your family,
mm-hmm.
but it's on the internet.
That is correct.
It's a digital lockbox.
It's a digital lockbox. You got it. So you don't put your wallet and watch in there, but you do put everything else that's valuable.
How'd you make it? How does it work?
Well, it's very simple. If you think of the concept of a safety deposit box, we've had one for years. Nothing feels safer. And recently we had banks get hijacked from millions of accounts all at once. But no safe deposit box got robbed at the same time. So if you have a safety deposit box where you have the only key, that means that you have control of the access. And so you basically take all of your data, what's digitized already, you get it from your lawyers or your insurance company, you put it right into the lockbox, and you learn how to digitize some of your important documents like certificates or adoption information or immigration information or whatever's important to your family.
Mm-hmm.
And you control access.
And what would you say to those who like the idea, but they're concerned that once something's online, it's not secure?
Well, basically everything's online nowadays. I agree with that. But the idea of the safety deposit box is it's your system. Our company doesn't have access. Nobody else has access to this data, only you. So it's you and your data and one key, if you will, and you control the key. It's safer feeling, and we use all the same securities that, you know, the best banks and investment companies.
Encryption,
do.
For example.
Encryption all the way. 256K, let's get technical. We could talk about all that stuff. Yeah. AES encryption, you know, FTT protocol, but nobody wants to hear that. They just want to know, is it safe?
Yeah.
And it's about as safe as anything could possibly be.
So the idea behind this then is, say something happens to mom or dad or grandpa or grandma.
Yeah.
Family members know where the important papers are.
We have a number of things we help people to do because this is all self-directed and they're filling the blank forms. And there are video tutorials for our members to learn how to do it. But we want everybody to start with a family emergency network. And in the family emergency network, you have all the critical documents. You have the, you know, do not resuscitates. You have the powers of attorney. You have the things that are relevant medically at the time. So if mom is, you know, visiting her relatives in Iowa and she falls down and breaks her hip, you know, with one phone call, one quick message to you, you get on your cell phone and you access the data on the lockbox, you email it right to the hospital, you eliminate the miles and the minutes, and it gets done immediately.
So what's been the reaction from customers when they've created this for their families?
Well, so far it's been terrific. I couldn't be more thankful. I've been very fortunate, and I got a little local local support from the newspaper and St. Augustine newspapers, and a couple of radio shows, and I got a lot of customers, and they're all saying, "Oh my goodness, this changes our life."
Mm-hmm. It's a great idea. Entrepreneurs always look for a need and then fill it. Is it the first of its kind?
I think there are a couple of others, but they're really developed by like insurance companies and so forth. Mine has no product sales whatsoever. It's membership driven. There are no fees, no advertising. We share nothing. In fact, our company, we maintain no personal information on a person other than a name, address, email address, and a card to renew their membership.
And it's affordable too, $100 a year.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. With a 10% discount for veterans.
Oh, very nice, because you're one yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly why.
Well, the website is mylegacylockbox.com, and the creator is Shep Harmon of St. Augustine. It's a great idea. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it a great deal.
Hope you'll come back. We can talk some more about senior issues.
I would love to do that. Thank you.
All right, and that is our show today. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. We always want your feedback. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tomorrow, the incredible growth of the UF Health Jacks Proton Therapy Institute. That's part of tomorrow's show. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for music. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.